As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The only place to read your emails and tweets. It's Wednesday, May 5th. This is the No Dunks Mailbag episode. Coming by way of the Athletic Podcast Network, I'm J.E. Skeets. Hashtag full squad right there. We got Mr. What You Need to Know, Tass Mellis.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Tass. We got Top Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo.
Ayo. Ayo. The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
And last but not least, making the magic happen, it's JD.
Hello.
There he is, and here we are on a Wednesday afternoon. Shout out to the stream team joining us live on YouTube. Please like, comment, and subscribe. We got another great batch of NBA questions that you guys have emailed in, tweeted in, left in the YouTube comments. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Before we get to the first one, Tass, something came up on this morning's Daily Show. Lee, you were talking about the Suns mascot, Go the Gorilla. And I said, there's a weird reason why he became the mascot. And I couldn't remember right on the spot. But I looked it up, had a couple people tweet at me and slide into the Instagram DMs. So here's what happened with the Gorilla, Lee. Just a fun story. It's pretty crazy when you think about it. For the first 11 seasons of their existence in the NBA, the Suns had no mascot. There was an early attempt to have the sunflower costume, but never caught on, so probably a good idea. Then, in the winter of 1980, a singing telegram was sent to the arena in a gorilla costume, and security saw him, the gorilla, and suggested, hey, stay for a little bit, entertain the fans during the breaks, and he kept coming to the games until he was officially invited to become the Suns' real mascot. And I didn't stop there, Lee. Apparently, there's been three people that have played Go the Gorilla. So hopefully those people that have previously been the mascot get some Supreme clothing, some Bape clothing, the coolest Nikes from this endorsement deal that we talked about. So there you go. Yeah.
Well, that figures too, because if they've been around since 1980, you said?
Yes, yeah, the gorilla.
40 years. So you get a good stint there if you are a gorilla. I mean, you're going on average, what, 13 years as your run as the gorilla. So, yeah, I think it's you know, it's like the Godfather. You just pass it down in your family, you know. And so I think it's a pretty tight fit. It's a pretty tight unit, the gorilla dudes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, only three of them. I don't know how up to date this Wikipedia article was, but if let's say it's even four, you're right, over the span of 40 years. That's a long time for bouncing around in a gorilla costume. But there you go. So anyway, a little mascot facts for you there, Tassie.
All right, let's get into the first one here. I appreciate that. I appreciate those mascot facts. This question LeBron may hate. Kevin Durant may have hated today's Daily Show. LeBron's going to hate this one. We're screwed, everybody. All right, first one. Good day, No Dunks. There are still so many potential playoff matchups out there. My question, if you're the Lakers, do you prefer to A, avoid the play-in and face the Clippers or Nuggets in the first round, or B, fall into the play-in to snag the 7th or 8th seed and face Phoenix or Utah in round one? if, of course, LA can get through the tourney. He ends it with, "My God, I love the NBA right now, even as a Raptors fan." That's from Mike in Calgary. Just can't get enough of the scenarios and, I guess, the stacked Western Conference, even though he's a Raptor man. So what do you think, Skeets? What would the Lakers prefer, in or out?
Well, let me ask y'all a question, okay? A hypothetical. Lee, specifically to you, all right? The scenario here is that a supervillain has abducted your family. He has taken them hostage. He has your boys. He has Roxy. He even has the guy that comes and helps you fix the holes in your roof. Okay? He's got everybody that you love.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. So this supervillain, you know, gets you on the phone and says, "Look, you can get them back. They're fine. I'm not going to do anything to them. But you have to complete one of these shooting challenges, and you have two options."
Mm-hmm.
The first one, Lee, is you have to hit 6 out of 10 three-pointers. Okay? 60%. The second option, he says, because he's diabolical, says you must hit 5 out of 10 three-pointers, but before you shoot those threes, you got to step to the free throw line and hit at least one of two. Which one are you doing, Lee? Either the free throws, just got to hit one of two, and then you got to hit 5 of 10 three-pointers, or just straight up, you're shooting the three ball. 6 of 10. Well, save your family, man.
Yeah, I'm going to the free throw line because I always feel like before I play pickup basketball, I like to like knock in maybe 10 from the free throw line just to get that radar locked in. Really? So it's amazing how like sometimes I've turned up late to like pick up ball and you don't get those warm-ups in and your shot's off the whole night. But you get those warm-up shots in and you're like, okay, I'm feeling good. I do get a bit of a sighter first. So then I'm knocking in a free throw and then I'm going to that left corner.
That's so good.
I'm going to that left corner and that's where I have to knock in 5 out of 10. And I'm like, yeah, I think I can hit 5 out of 10 once I've seen it go through. I've seen that the arm's straight and I've seen the ball go through the net. So
okay.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I asked you that, Lee, is the first option here with the Lakers is avoiding that play-in tournament and just facing the Clippers or Nuggets. You got to win basically 4 out of 7 games there in the first round series. That's like 57%, right, of winning that the games in a series like that. Yeah, let's round it up, make it 60%. The second option is the Lakers fall into the play-in tourney, and you got those pesky free throws where you say it's the loneliest place in the world. My God, a supervillain has your family. There's going to be some pressure on you there. And then the reason I made it 5 out of 10 threes is because of Mike's like theory here and many others going, well, it's an easier first round challenge to have the Suns of the Jazz. Now, I wholeheartedly disagree with that. That's why I took it from 6 to 5, just to make this a weird, weird hypothetical for Lee, who then got into the mechanics of getting to the gym.
Yeah, you gave him an opportunity to go to a hypothetical free throw line thinking he wouldn't take it. The guy can't bypass a regular free throw line. Now you're sending him to an imaginary one.
Yeah, but I just think this is silly. I don't think you're actually going to take those free throws because the truth is it's still you got to hit 6 out of the 10 three-pointers there. So why are you adding even more shots, more things that could go wrong there at the line? Maybe it's windy outside, Lee. Maybe the ball's a little sick. Maybe it's slick. Maybe somebody's distracting you. So no, Tass, I mean, to answer this, I think it's like, first off, you're disrespecting the hell out of two of the best teams in the league, the Jazz and the Suns. And yeah, okay, I get it. They haven't gone very far. The experience isn't there. But still, I have no problem, you know, wanting to face the Clippers or the Nuggets because I'm in. I'm in the playoffs and nothing could go wrong in the play-in tournament is what I'm getting at. So what do you think, TK?
I'll make my answer quick. I went a similar route. LeBron James has done this now for 18 seasons. I'm sure he prefers the same rhythm of a series that he knows, which is lose the first game and then crush you the rest of it, rather than, you know, whatever happens in a one-game scenario. Could be bad, could be two-game scenario where, yeah, he still might not be up to snuff. Listen, I think they would get through the play-in tournament and play the Suns or the Jazz, which I would be very excited to see, but you're eliminating that uncertainty and you're just going with what you know. So, yeah, I wanted to include this question because, yeah, everyone is talking about it. It is interesting, but I don't think there's any chance, even though I think it would help just to get a couple more games before facing a real good Phoenix Suns team or a real good Utah Jazz team. I lead with the Suns because I would be more scared of the Phoenix Suns right now than the Utah Jazz. But I think that could help LeBron. But either way, he would rather just be in the playoffs. What do you think, Trey?
Yeah, I think y'all nailed it, because LeBron has already said he doesn't know if he's going to be totally healthy for the remainder of this year. Maybe he came back too early in the first place. Now you're adding an additional two games to LeBron's workload, and anything could happen in that. You know, like, I mean, I don't really think the Lakers would be fazed about having to win one game and then go on to the playoffs, but anything could happen in that one game. LeBron could sprain his ankle again. AD could get hurt and go down for the remainder of the playoffs. If you're eliminating just one extra 48-minute session, you got to do it, unless you're Lee Ellis and you want to get your free throws in, even while everybody's waiting for you to just come on and play the court. No, I got to get my cider ready. Got to get my radar locked in here. Lee, we're trying to play. We got nine guys. Let's go.
I'm thirsty. I got to get my cider ready.
Yeah.
But yeah, nobody wants to go into the play-in tournament because anything could happen. I don't really think the Lakers are totally fazed about having to play any of these teams that are going to have home court advantage against them in the first round of the playoffs. They just beat the Nuggets without LeBron, so they got to be feeling pretty good there. And the Clippers, despite the fact that they've been playing some pretty solid basketball, they're still the little brothers in L.A. Surely the Lakers would love to take it to them, so... you know, I think they're just going to want to go straight into the playoffs if they can.
Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, it's the same because, you know, let's just say you had a Ja Morant or something like that just absolutely have the game of his life in that elimination against the Lakers. LeBron just doesn't want to have to go through that. You get a little bit of a safety net by automatically going into the playoffs that you can lose a game or two or three and still advance. But the potential of losing one game and being eliminated from playoff contention is not something that LeBron, you know, he doesn't feel that at his stage of his career he should even have to really contemplate that. He should be automatically in. That's why I think he's also made those comments about the play-in tournament, because he knows the Lakers are a little closer to it than he would like them to be. But I think ultimately they'll be safe anyway, so it's a bit of a moot point.
Next question. Hey dudes, since Luka's crazy three-point floater to help the Mavericks beat the Grizzlies a couple weeks ago, I think the Devin Harris half-court shot has been mentioned like four or five times on the show, at least a handful of times. I don't know about four or five. But as a Mavs fan, I've always been very fond of Devin Harris. But I think to most NBA fans, he's probably just a guy, and maybe even venturing into journeyman territory. This got me thinking, which NBA player has the biggest disparity between how good slash successful they were in their career and how often you guys talk about them because of some random play or moment? Churn up, thunder thighs, flossom. That's from Adam. So TK, why don't you get us started here with this one?
Well, much in the same manner of Devin Harris, Trevor Booker is a guy that we bring up quite a bit around here. He averaged 6.9 points per game during an 8-year career. That's nice. He was a nice role player. But just like Devin Harris's half-court shot, Trevor Booker also hit one of the craziest shots in league history. So he comes up quite a bit on the show, all thanks to the no-looker Booker, a shot we actually tried to recreate way back in the starters days.
And worth another look, by the way, again, at that Booker shot.
Lots of looks.
If you didn't see it, it was Friday night. I mean, it's unbelievable.
That's a lift in volleyball, though.
But we wanted to know just how difficult this was. So before tonight's show, we took it over to the court here in the studio and took a couple cracks at it.
Yeah.
Lee got up there first. Ooh.
Looked good.
Looked pretty good. All of us had a go. I went a little long. Not bad. Now, I don't know if like, how deep are we? Are we sort of where Booker was?
About the hash mark. Yeah. About close, I would say.
Now we started playing defense on it.
Good D.
Things got a little wild. Trey's going to block Lee.
Who was called for a foul, I
Lee called for a foul. But look, we did have some success. Cash!
Oh, yeah!
Woo, swish bomb!
Cash, but I thought Taz did a little better, a little more line drive. Boom!
Oh, yeah.
Very nice.
And he was a little more pumped up. So hey, it is.
I knocked it down
doable.
First.
It is doable. And Taz did knock it down first.
Wow. Rolling
had to
in
call
clips,
out Matt
baby.
Austin there. The editing.
Yeah, he liked, exactly I guess right. He wanted to end on a celebration, I think. Well, yeah, was the true. Editing choice there. But nice rolling. The start is
actually looking
baby.
At it again, I don't think we were far enough away there. Booker is a little more out, isn't he? Like when we saw that clip.
He's pretty deep.
We were a little closer to the key, but we knocked a couple of them in.
Yeah,
but you're right.
Yeah, Trevor Booker, you know, he basically at this point, he only comes up when we're talking about the no-looker Booker, but I feel like we haven't even seen that shot attempted again since that went in with Trevor Booker. Maybe it has happened and nobody cares because it's hard to make, and probably it ends in an air ball most of the time, but to actually make it, to get it off, in time with regards to the shot clock. Crazy stuff.
And that was a bounce pass, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think that's why we were bounce passing it to each other.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about that part. Yeah. Nice.
It's a great answer. Lee, do you have any other players that come to mind?
Yeah, well, mine's not a play, but it's more a game, and it's a rookie Brandon Jennings in his seventh game where he had a 55-point explosion, because I remember before the season when he got drafted, because he went to Italy, remember? He didn't go to college. He was like, I'm going to get paid rather than go and play in the college system. So he came over, got drafted by the Bucks, and I think I was talking to our old friend Dan Lorimer from The Score, and I said, watch out for this guy. I think that experience is really going to help him. He nearly had a triple-double in his first game, 17 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. He had 32 points, I think, the night before the 55, and after that 55, I was like, I'm telling you, man, the next Allen Iverson. This guy's better than Allen Iverson, you know, because he's got the three-point shot. He's a better shooter than Iverson, but he's about the same size. He's also got a bit of spunk about him, you know, like he's got that confidence where he's like, I'm not playing college. I'm not going the traditional route.
Right.
And then he just exploded onto the scene, and it was like, oh, he's rookie of the year for sure, maybe an all-star. But his career, he's only 31. It feels like he's been out of the league 10 years, you know, because he stayed there with Milwaukee. I think he turned down a contract extension for after a while. They traded him to the Pistons, and then he sort of just bounced around a bit. He went back to Europe. So, you know, I just sort of feel when you see a rookie, you know, maybe a little bit like LaMelo Ball doing things, it just sort of, for me, brings back like that Brandon Jennings just... for a while there, he looked like an absolute steal from the Bucks, and he was going to be a superstar. But his career sort of fell apart pretty quickly, actually. Like in terms of like that was his peak in his first season. After that, he kind of dropped off a bit.
Well, that's the weird part. His peak was in like the first 2 weeks of his first season, and then it just only went down because, well, yeah, not many places to go after you score 55 there in the first couple of weeks. That is a good one. He definitely. Yeah. It's nice that his name is coming up with, you know, 50-point performances and stuff like that. I feel like he was just on some list. He was, I guess it was, who was the young guy that just went for 50? Kevin Porter Jr.
Kevin Porter, yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, it's, who was it? LeBron. It was him. It was Brandon Jennings. And there was one more guy that had gone for 50 that young. It was it Tatum? No, maybe not.
Luka, maybe?
I don't think it was Luka either, though.
A super
maybe
big
it was.
Name.
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah. Anyway. Jennings was in the mix there for that one. Good one. Do you have one, Tess? Booker. It was Booker.
The book. Yeah. Well, speaking of Devin's, the emailer wrote in about Devin Harris. Did Devin Harris get a 50? He had a monster game. Maybe it wasn't quite.
I don't remember 50.
I think he had like a 40, like 6 or something against the Mavericks after they traded him. I remember that. He had revenge game. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting guy because he was an all-star for 1 year, traded for Jason Kidd. Definitely a lot of hype around Devin Harris, but never developed into a star, but yeah, he was, I really did like him. I thought he was going to be super good, and it brings up the definition of a journeyman. Devin Harris, I guess he kind of fits that profile, I guess, but
yeah.
He wasn't all-star.
He's got an all-star appearance, though, he does have one all-star appearance. Man, this guy wore all blue jerseys. Wild stuff when you look at him on Basketball Reference. Navy, 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 navy. Light blue.
Well, he also played for, like, the Mavericks, like, 3 different times, right? I think that was the whole thing. I believe that was included in the email. We edited it out, but
I'll throw in another blue jersey. The Wizards' ugly blues, a guy played in them, Michael Ruffin. Every year around March or so, it's the anniversary of the ridiculous play where in 2007, Raptors-Wizards, Wiz up 3, time ticking down. The buzzer is going to go off, or Michael Ruffin can just hold the thing and get fouled. But instead, he throws it up into the air, not high enough for the buzzer to go off, just low enough for another guy to catch it, Morris Peterson, and fire it in from like 35, 40 feet. An inexplicable move by Michael Ruffin. That's what I remember Michael Ruffin for. And going through this, I went back and I saw Gilbert Arenas, who was a teammate of his, and his quote on the play. He said, quote, "How does the strongest man on the floor at that time throw it 5 inches? All he had to do was hold the ball and they foul him. How does he throw the ball after all them push-ups and whatever he did in the weight room?" Pretty funny quote there.
Thanks.
Yeah. But a memorable moment.
Absolutely. I'll go with a former Raptors player, though he was definitely a journeyman. He played on a lot of teams. And I think he came to mind because there's another version of this guy in the league right now. Mike James. Mm. We got another Mike James in the league, but I'm talking about the old Mike James, who had like this weirdly great season for the Raptors where he scored over 20 points per game. And we're not talking in like 20, 30 games. Played the entire season for the Raps, you know, missed a handful, but started 79 games and was a 20-point-per-game scorer. And, you know, was like pretty lights out from three-point land, if I remember. And that is just really, really weird. But he played for a bunch of teams. I know he left at one point, went and played international ball and sort of came back and had a cup of coffee with like your Bulls, Trey. And then I think he played for the Mavericks too and stuff like that. So I'll just go Mike James. He just comes up a lot. Again, sort of helped out by the fact that there's another Mike James playing on the Nets right now. I'll be honest, when I saw it the first time, I was like, no way. That can't be him. Like, you're kidding me? Like, this guy loves basketball. He's like Jamal Crawford type. It's like, he's back in the league, but no. The younger Mike James. But both little little pit bull type guys. So there's some similarities, I guess. But what a magical season that was, Tess. Mike James was the best player on the squad.
Yeah, it felt like it. That he was on the team for like 5, 6, 7 years with the amount he set right. us back.
Played there. 1 year.
Yeah, felt like he was there forever. It was literally 1 year. That's weird.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Next email here. Hi, Not Dunkers. I grew up a Blazers fan, and I remember in the early 80s in the Jim Paxson era, yes, that was a thing, we had a sensation by the name of Billy Ray Bates. He was a jitterbug, high-flying, fireball explosion. He was Sean Kemp mixed with Charles Barkley, but his NBA light faded fast, and soon he was out of the league. Do you all remember legendary players from your favorite teams whose light went out too fast for anyone outside of local coverage to really remember? That's from James in Portland. Oh, we're talking old raps here. I
got a feeling you're going to pick the same guy as maybe me, but go ahead.
Okay,
yeah.
let's say his first name on three.
Okay.
One, two, three. Keon.
Keon. Yeah. I knew it. Keon Clark, baby. Yeah. He was amazing. He was legit good for a year and a half for the Raptors, and then, he was gone. But you go ahead.
He was gone. Right. No, he was definitely one of them. He was before his time. I don't know why he was before his time. He was just good.
He used to shoot the three a bit, though, didn't he, as well? Like, for a big guy?
Not really.
but he sort of, he sort of shot it.
He was like, obviously, a lanky, explosive big guy that was light on his feet. Yeah, he was an applauding center. He has the record still, I think, for the Raptors. Franchise record for blocks in a game, which I still believe 12. Is 12. I don't think that's been beaten.
12 blocks in a game. Maybe it was before his time because he invented the thrunk. He had a huge thrunk. Any of those those highlight reels from the early Raptor days, which I can't believe Keon Clark was only there for 1 year because he sort of left an imprint on my brain the way he, I don't know, he's just a pretty unique, really, really thin 6'11 guy that was super athletic, and it's wild to think he was out of the league by 29. He kind of bounced around a little bit, only 1 year with the Raps. But, he's the first guy for me. And another guy is Sherron Wright, who I thought was going to be good. He was a beefy man. Number 6 pick in 94 out of Clemson. The Sixers traded him after a year and a half to the Raps. I think he had some weight issues, but then he had a car accident in the offseason. He was on the way to a clinic. And a basketball clinic, and then he was never the same. He tried to come back, but I've back in the post days, I was just a fan of Sherron Wright and the way he can move those tootsies. So two different dudes for me, but a decade, not a decade apart, but Years apart, I thought could be really good. Sherron Wright, great name too. Keon Clark, great name too.
Oh, it's a great name. Yeah. He was good though, man. In that one, yeah, because he played like basically a year and a half because he came over in a trade. Then he played a full season for sure for the Raps, and it does feel like he was there a lot longer too. But he was a respectable like 11-8, like a block and a half a game. And he played even better, if you remember, Tass, in the playoffs. He was really good versus the Pistons in that five-game series loss. He put up 19-16 in a game four, like a must-win game four, to give us a game five and a chance at trying to get past the first round of the Pistons there. But he played really good in game five, too. They obviously came up short, but he was damn good. And then, yeah, flamed out of the league. Had a lot of issues after the league. He went to prison for a while, for at least a couple of years. I believe he's out now. I think he's an Illinois boy, isn't he, TK?
That's exactly right. He was going to be one of my answers for a question later. He played on the same high school team as my cousin. We're from the same hometown, actually. Keon Clark. Shout out Danville, Illinois. He was great. He was a good player, really good player. And then, he fell off because of the off-court issues, no doubt.
Yeah, yep. Lee, do you have an answer?
Well, mine's actually similar in the way that this guy just burst onto the scene, but then his career got derailed because of off-court issues, and that's Richard Dumas, the Phoenix Suns.
I loved him.
One season in Phoenix there was incredible. And then in the playoffs, in the finals against the Bulls, he was almost the Suns' second-best player there. He put up some really big numbers. And he had some substance issues and was out of the league for, the following season. And then he sort of did come back, but, he just was sort of couldn't quite get back there. But I just remember in that finals, like, how incredible he was. And I was like, man, this guy is a legit star. And they picked him up. I think he was a mature-age rookie when he did play there in Phoenix. But that was it. He basically had one decent season in the NBA, one really good. I think he made an all-rookie team, but he just couldn't quite, keep his life together off the court, and that ended up costing him what would have been, I think, a pretty decent NBA career.
Mm-hmm. I remember I had his rookie card. That was around the time that I was into cards, and that was like one of my prized possessions. I loved him as a player. I was like, this guy's amazing. This guy's going to be so good. And then, I didn't check the Beckett on that one, on the Richard Dumas card. I can't imagine it's going for a lot nowadays. But anyway, that's a great answer. And Trey, do you have one?
Yeah, Ben Gordon. He was the original C.J. McCollum, basically, for the Bulls back in the day. Drafted number 3, which is something I kind of had forgotten, by the Bulls in 2004. Made the all-rookie team. Sixth man of the year in his first season. The only player to win that as a rookie. Bulls went to the playoffs for the first time since 98. He was really good for the Bulls, kind of putting them back on the map for the first time after the Dynasty era. 18.5 points per game. 41.5% from three-point. He was an early step-back jumper practitioner. He's kind of credited as the guy who invented the high hands fake, where you're dribbling, it looks like you're going to shoot it, and then suddenly you're taken off somewhere else for a shot. I would be curious to see what Steph Curry thinks of Ben Gordon, because he's got a lot of Ben Gordon moves deep in the bag, but the Bulls struggled in the 07-08 season. They had that huge lottery bump to draft Derrick Rose number 1 in 08, which meant that time was limited in Chicago for Ben Gordon. He's one of the rare guys to sign a qualifying offer prior to his fifth season. He balled out 20 points per game in 08-09, 41 from 3. Signed with the Pistons after that, and it was pretty much a disaster. Never got higher than 14 a game with Detroit, though he did score the 10 millionth point in NBA history. That's a thing. Anyways, 3 seasons in Detroit for Ben Gordon, 2 with the Bobcats, 1 for Orlando, and then he was gone, and much like these other guys you have mentioned, he has had off-court issues as well since leaving the NBA.
Did he ever play for the United Kingdom in any international play or no? I know he
was eligible
there,
I don't know
school.
If he did
he was eligible, right? I think that is right, but I don't know if he played. Maybe somebody in the stream team can let us know. Great answer, that was a fun question.
Good one,
James. Good stuff. And I saw the stream team dropping some great answers as well. Keep it up, guys. All right, next one though. Hey No Dunks crew, as a Kings fan, this season has been a roller coaster of a ride, but nothing hurt more then when I would tune in to a good old classic after a Kings win and hear Trey shoot down Skeet's excitement for my team. To make things worse, it turned out that Trey was right. Kings still suck. But as the universe would have it, and the weeks went by, and the Bulls suffered loss after loss, I listened with a joy to hear Trey officially announce that the Bulls are officially not back. Mm. I let out a maniacal laugh and thought to myself, damn it, Trey, you asked for this one. My question, when was a time you felt no remorse for somebody and it didn't even feel bad? Turn up. Love you guys. B-A-N-B. Yeah, Bulls are not back. That is from Forrest in L.A. My answer to this is short and sweet and to the point. I didn't feel remorse at all and didn't feel bad at all when Trump got COVID. I was like, that's interesting. Oh, so that's my answer. Did I celebrate it? Maybe no, but I sure felt no remorse for that news breaking. So, Lele, you got an answer?
Yeah, that's a great one. I don't know if I can top that one. Mine's a little deeper, a bit of a longer story. Going back to the days when I used to work in a hotel in London and worked in the foyer bar there. And we used to have Freemasons come in and they would meet there, and the new recruits would always have to sort of buy the drinks to sort of, you know, start the night off. And they had a tendency to be very rude to the bar staff. And, you know, often in Europe and Britain is you don't run up a tab, you sort of pay for your drinks as you order them. But in this instance, because there were so many other guys coming in, they would run up a bit of a tab. And this guy often happened, but I remember one guy in particular was exceptionally rude one night. And so as he was ordering drinks, I just decided to add a few extras to his tab. And by the time he actually got his bill, it was significantly more than what he had ordered. And he was very embarrassed because he didn't want to look cheap, but he also didn't want to pay the bill. And I was like, well, I'm happy to talk you through, but they had to go off their dinnery meeting thing as well. And I'm like, I said, we can go through the bill one by one if you like. And he was just fuming, but he didn't want to show that in front of the new potential you know, team that he was about to join.
Wow.
Yeah. And so so he was there and he's like, well, you know, this person, that person. I said, yeah, this is the bill, man. This is the bill here. If you don't want to pay it, you don't have to. I'll just go and get the manager and you guys can talk it over. Like, and he's like, no, I'll pay it. But I'll talk to him afterwards. You know, he was trying to save face there. And it was just like, if you weren't so rude to me, you probably wouldn't have had to pay for about another 50 drinks on top of what you already ordered. Anyway, he ended up paying. He did not like me. He didn't leave a tip. But I like to think he tipped the hotel for the service instead. So, I was happy to just get that one over him. And, you know, just don't be rude to the waiting staff or the bar staff. And it might not happen to you.
Yeah, that's a good, you know, life tip there. How many drinks did you actually add, though? You didn't have 50.
It was a lot. I'm telling you, like, his bill would have been close to, like, he was probably expecting about £100. And I'm telling you, it was well over £200, which is a lot when you're paying only £2.50 for a pint at the time,
right?
Or, you know, £2 or £3. So
For every, you know, drink, you were just adding another one.
At one point, I was just like, bing, 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 like this, because he was that guy. He was doing the like, other people were at the bar, and he was trying to sort of talk over them to get drinks and stuff like that. And I'm like, there's other people here. You don't own this. They're not even staying in the hotel as well. They were just like renting one of the rooms out the back. So. And I just knew as well, like, the management of that hotel were just awful. So they wouldn't have had any idea what was going on. And, you know, I just had a little bit of fun with him. And I knew he wasn't going to tip me. So I was like, you're paying one way or the other. You either give the money to me or you give the money to the hotel. Whichever. You choose. I'll choose for you.
Hey, nothing free about these drinks, Mason. Yeah. I wish you said that while he was walking out the door. Tass, do you have an answer to this?
Well, yeah. When I broke my leg, I broke the old femur. When I fell, my one leg, the broken leg, was supported by the other one because I was on my side. So the broken leg was on top, and I was laying there waiting for the ambulance to come. And there was one guy who we were playing with that continuously told me, you got to get on your back. You got to get on your back. You got to see your leg. You got to get on your back. And I said, I can't. Like, my leg is in two pieces and it's being supported by the other one. Like, it doesn't work. I can't. Like, I carry my, and he just, because the ambulance took so long, he had a lot of opportunity to bug the crap out of me while I was on the ground. And so at one point I said, all right, I tried multiple times, and I got like a little bit further. The one time when I finally gave it my all for whatever stupid reason he wanted me to, he wanted to examine me. He's not a medical doctor. But anyways, I yelled out in pain. I had never been in more pain. And so I was pretty pissed. So, you know, I got all shored up, all good, you know, months later, got back on the ball field. And then that same guy got injured pretty badly. It was probably an ACL, but I didn't feel any remorse whatsoever seeing it happen. I mean, we weren't the best of buds. He caused me some serious pain probably 12 months earlier. So anyway, all's good.
Did you tell him to get on his back?
No, no.
Oh, that'd be good.
No, I said, I'll call the ambulance because that's what you should do.
Yeah.
You shouldn't tell me to get on your back, non-professional practicing doctor.
Anyway, wow.
Yeah.
TK, what's your answer to this one?
My answer for this one is Lee eating the hot peppers for a pick and payoff. No remorse because of the confidence he went in to this pick and payoff. Hot peppers, how could they be? Oh, they were hot. We all tried them, probably towards the end of the show, the last few minutes. I was an instant sweat fest, as I am anytime I put a spicy food near my body. But when the peppers are so hot that Lee was like dry heaving and uncontrollably hiccuping, I just thought it was hilarious because, you know, it's not going to last forever. You know, it's not going to be permanent damage, but, oh, it's brutal when you're going through it, but it's hilarious when you're seeing one of your buddies go through it.
And you think water is going to help, but it doesn't really.
No.
You've got to sort of not even drink the milk, just have it in your mouth to try to cool it down. But it's hard to just sort of let it sit in your mouth there like that. But, it was like hallucinogenic almost in that sense, because you just feel your body's just like, what the hell is going on in here? But that was a fun one, actually. I enjoyed that one in the end. Yeah,
I thought you were gonna go with the other one, the pick and payoff where he had to eat something and I felt no remorse. It was the banana challenge, and the reason I had no remorse is because this guy said he had 3 or 4 bananas in the morning before a day he knew he was going to have to eat like 10 bananas on the show. I've never been able to wrap my head around that. That's what you said. You said you ate 3 bananas.
Yeah, no, I definitely ate 3 in the morning but I don't think I knew that was the punishment.
Oh, I think you did.
I'm not sure, but yeah, when I saw them coming out, I was like, oh yeah, I had 3. I remember being banana hungover for like 3 days after that, just not having a banana.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder if this is going to like put me off bananas, but it got me back in the end. But
yeah, that clip is up on our No Dunks YouTube page, a certified classic. And I did title it Banana Man Eats a Dozen Bananas or 12 Bananas. And people were upset because they're like, in the clip, you don't eat 12 bananas, you eat 9. But then I say in the comments, he did eat 3 the morning of, so he sort of did. And a dozen sounds funnier than 9.
I thought
a few people.
Go ahead, Lee.
I was just going to say, a few people messaged me after that saying, watch out for your potassium intake. You know, it can be dangerous.
He just laughs it off. Potassium intake? I was eating bananas for dessert later that day.
I thought you were going to not feel remorse for when Lee had to eat fast food as a pickup.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah,
I didn't feel remorse because it's fine.
He put a wetsuit on. What about that one?
Well, when you ate the fast food, didn't you eat like a steak? JD's got to chime in on this one. Didn't you eat like a steak that morning?
What, on the day of?
It was the poutine eating contest in Toronto.
Oh, that's when he ate.
He knew that he was going to have to eat an entire thing of poutine. And I look over at him less than an hour before going on air, like 45 minutes. And he hadn't even started. He was ordering the steak. I'll take a jumbo steak, medium rare.
I was there when he ordered.
I'm like, what are you doing, man?
For real sports. He's like, that's where it was.
And then, of course, during the contest, he's like, takes a few bites, and then he just pushes the... I'm done. It's like he had no intention of participating in that at all.
No.
Because the lady came around with the menus, and the steak was like $45, and I'm like, I mean, are we allowed to order from this?
I was there. I remember this so vividly. You ordering this, us going, you know, we're about to eat a bunch of poutine, and like the whole bit is to like try and chow it down. You're like, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, when you're hungry, it's like, I know that this probably will cost me later on, but I can't wait that long. I've got to bridge the gap here. And just I'll eat the steak first, and I'll deal with the fries and the gravy and stuff later on. Oh, but I also knew you guys were also eating the poutine, so I was like, I can probably slip under the radar.
He's punting that category. Like turnovers in fantasy. No thanks. But one thing I remember from that poutine challenge, wasn't the poutine like a million degrees, like the hottest poutine of all time?
Well,
yeah. Trying to eat it as fast as possible.
Yeah. I think that was actually when we were in the in Toronto for game 5 of the finals. And remember then the Raptor came out and he brought the poutine. Oh. That was piping hot because he poured the gravy on it, remember? We were eating it on TV. That's what I remember.
Are you telling me we ate poutine on live television twice?
Absolutely. That clip,
three times.
That clip, we're like, oh, great, poutine, because it's raining, it's kind of, you know, a bit cold, and then we're eating it. And it's like,
you couldn't deny the Raptor. You couldn't deny the Raptor mascot coming out with poutine on TV. Yeah. So you had to just suffer through some piping hot gravy. I do remember. Yeah, he poured it.
Yeah,
he poured it out. Yeah,
that's when we were in that little tent in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it was like one of our last shows.
I think we sort of had some idea he was going to do something, but I don't think we knew it was that. And it was like, when it was there, I was like, oh, perfect. You know, it's a bit of a cold day. You want warm food, and then it was just like you're eating. Oh, that was great.
Oh, I hate the burnt top of your mouth, too. Oh. It's like you're just rubbing your tongue along it. Oh, all right. Great questions here. This is an awesome batch. This is like a good batch of poutine, these questions. We got the current. Well, you know, we didn't eat it for a third time on TV, but there is a clip of me asking Chuck Swirsky what goes in the poutine to test his Canadian-ness. So we talk about poutine a lot on this show. I just watched that clip. Somebody shared it with me the other day. And Chuck, like, he knows the answer, but he's, like, really weird about it. I mean, he says the first two things.
Salami
and I'm like,
and cheese?
No, he didn't make that joke. I forget about how he said it. I think he just said, well, you got the curds. And then you've got the gravy. Well, I think he doesn't say the fries
part.
The Turks. I think, and then he goes, french fries.
All right, next one. Hey, no gunks. We all remember random players for relatively personal reasons. One of mine is Andrew Bynum, the first player in NBA history to be younger than me. Of course, now the majority of the league is younger than I am, but at the time, the fact that someone younger than me was in the league seemed so weird. For that reason, I've always felt connected to Bynum. Anyway, what about you guys? Do you remember the first time someone younger than you played in the NBA, or any other weird reason why you feel a personal connection to a certain player? Thanks for the great work. That's from Nicholas in Quebec City. Lee, what do you think?
You know, there's been a fair few sort of the next Jordans coming through over the years. And one of them I remember was a young player by the name of Kobe Bryant. And I was 20 when he was drafted. He was 18. And someone said, oh, this guy's the next Jordan. And I'm like, we've heard that before. But for some reason, that one sort of did stick around a little bit more. But again, because I was 20 and he was 18, I was like, man, when I was 12, I was going to the NBA. Here I am at 20. I'm pretty much almost retired from playing basketball myself. And there's an 18-year-old kid just coming through to play in the NBA. Let's see if he lives up to it. Well, he did all right for his career. But really, for me, it became more of a thing when we were at Summer League in Vegas and we would get some of those guys on, some of the rookies who were like 19 years old or 20 years old. And, you know, up close, a lot of them hadn't even really like shaved and that they had this cleanest, freshest face. And here we all were sitting there. And I was like, man, I feel old sometimes, especially a guy like Zach LaVine. I remember when he came on and he looked just like a little kid up there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, man. I mean, you know, I was sort of late 30s, I guess, when we were out there in Vegas. And that to me was when I was like, man, it just passed me by. I always held out hope that maybe I could break into the NBA, but it wasn't going to happen. But then seeing those young kids with their fresh faces, and I was like, this is so daunting, you know, to be, you know, like such a great talent, you're in the NBA, but just having lived that life as well, sort of your 20s and 30s, you're like, man, they got so much life to live here, these guys.
They got so much poutine to eat.
Yeah, and they just look like tiny, young, little babies out there, and...
You know, that's what it was.
Tiny. Like 6'10". You know, I know. Well, that was the other thing.
He's tiny little babies.
But just, you know, when the cameras are on, sometimes those guys were great before we went live, but once the cameras are rolling and stuff, you could see a couple of them too, a little bit intimidated by the atmosphere, the crowd, and being on TV and stuff. Who was it? Someone was texting their mum, I think, before they were coming on, saying, "I'm going to be on TV." That might have been Zach LaVine, actually, but you know, it just sort of really hit home more being right next to these guys on TV and just seeing how young they still looked.
Okay. Tess?
I'll jump in with a guy whose birthday is close to mine. We're a month apart, so I just always connected myself to Jose Calderon. I guess he was hanging around, the NBA for a long time in his 30s. I was trying to hang around, not make the NBA like Lee, but just hang around athletically. I think I always connect myself to him because we're really close, and Beyonce as well, because all three of us were born in the same year, about a month apart. So me, Bay, and Jose.
Bay and Jose. That's A. Cool. All right. Cool. TK, what's your answer?
Devin Harris is actually one for me because Laura was in class groups with him when they went to school together at University of Wisconsin. So this is a Devin Harris household. And also all of the high school guys in the 2001 NBA draft. This was not the first high school draft, but it was the first one that had a high school player go number one. That was Kwame Brown. And coming in, this was like, this is going to be the class. This is what we've been building towards, being able to draft all these guys out of high school. That was my same year I graduated high school, class of 01. We were hype, man. Kwame Brown, Tyson Chandler, Eddie Curry, Desana Jop, huge names. These guys are all going to be stars. Didn't quite end up that way. Didn't quite go according to plan. I guess of all those guys, Tyson Chandler had the best career of all those high school guys. But from a standpoint of players in the 01 draft who had the best career and didn't attend college, got to be Tony Parker way down there in the second round. Had an incredible career. He's going to be a Hall of Famer, where all those high school guys, not so much.
I mean, that's funny you said Tony Parker. That might be my weird connection, being the first NBA athlete star that we ever interviewed way back as the Basketball Jones in a Subway sandwich shop down in Phoenix. But I also have a strange personal connection to a guy I've never met, but you have, Lee. This clip.
I like you. You make me feel good.
Johnny.
There's something I love about that. Again, I've never even met Johnny Flynn, but I think that's how I felt when I first met Lee Ellis. And I can't like really explain it. I'm laughing. What the hell did you just say? I like you, though. So that's my guy. I'm going with Johnny Flynn, even though I've never met him. I know we just played that recently, but I love that clip so much.
Yeah. I wish he'd stuck around in the league, Johnny, because maybe he could have been my guy, you know? But he went to play for Melbourne, too, so we got a bit of a connection there.
Oh, but, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you say to him that made him feel good?
I think I remember saying something about his speed being like Usain Bolt.
okay.
Yeah.
Nice compliment. Nice fastest compliment. Man in the world.
There might be. I wonder if that clip is out there somewhere, the whole thing. I can't remember, but it was something like
Lee,
that. It was
you
definitely
have like every single photo you've ever taken. You must have this video somewhere.
No, but I had a drive from the score, and it fried somehow. So I lost so much of it, unfortunately. But it might be at this time. I'll see if I can dig it up.
Yes. Let's get that clip up. I don't think I've ever even seen that full clip.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. Because hold on. Was that clip for the Basketball Jones, or was like you at the score doing something else? Tess says no.
It was you at the score. It was you at the score.
Yeah, it was at the score.
Yeah, but
it wasn't for the Basketball Jones.
No. It wasn't like we...
I think it was. I think it was one of those times where... we gave Lee a couple of questions to ask people over a few weeks kind of thing every time he was down there. So you may have been interviewing him separately, and then you tacked on our questions.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Yeah, yes, definitely, because I did like that Hollywood thing, and then I did the Super Bowl thing. So it was more likely that he was in one of those.
Yeah.
But do they still exist?
Oh,
that's the great question.
I'd love to make that a certified classic if we can.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Try and find that. Maybe Dickie has it in the basement.
Wouldn't you love to travel without the actual, traveling part? For example, I want to go to Lisbon, let's say. I just snap my fingers, I'm there. No driving to the airport, no flight delays, no fools at security who still don't know that, yes, you need to take your laptop out of your bag and place it in the tray. Oh my God, how long have we been doing this? Travel without traveling. I want it both ways, but that's not possible. It is with Mack Weldon, though. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But this is possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I've got it all. I got the Air Knit underwear. I got the Ace Collection sweatpants. I've got the Silver Peak polo. Everything fits perfectly. All I get is compliments. Mack Weldon has figured this stuff out. Because performance fabric usually means clothes that look or feel sort of techy or shiny. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of a busy life. They look like regular clothes, which is good. I want regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with the promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, a couple more questions here. I'll go next. What's up, peeps? So a few weeks ago, I had to do my military service required for all Taiwanese citizens. While I was in the Army, I wasn't allowed to use my phone much, which means I couldn't listen to the No Dunks podcast. On the day I finished my time in the Army, I didn't waste a second. I turned on a classic the moment I got on the bus for the way home. After 2 weeks of not listening to the podcast, that moment was glorious. Like a cup of coffee in the morning. So here's my question. What was a time y'all had a similar feeling when you got to do something you weren't able to do for a while? This is from Peter, of course, in Taiwan. Shout out to Peter. TK, get us started.
Oh, Skeets. I love opening day. Sun is shining. The grass is vibrant. The boys are all buzzing. I'm talking, of course, about the first spike ball game of spring. Mm. Felt good to finally get out there over the weekend. A little rusty, no doubt about it. But by the end of a couple of hours, we're dropping cute Steves and Grizzlies and big boppers before you know it. The mud squishing between your toes. We're destroying Grisha's lawn. Oh, glorious stuff. Spike ball season is upon us. Finally.
Yeah. Yeah, that was nice to get out there. I was sore for 2 days. I'm not going to lie, man.
Totally.
You didn't know you're getting old when you're sore after playing spike ball for 2 days, Tass. I don't know. You said you were feeling it a little bit, I guess.
Well, the uneven ground on Grisha's grass got my ankles a little bit. I just got all the dirt out of all the crevices of my feet, like, today. Oh, yeah, it took forever. It's under nails, under... But man, you can't wear shoes. I mean,
it was barefoot rules. That's truly when spike ball season has started. Yeah, there was talk about people wearing cleats, but no, yeah. Come on, get out of here. We're not gonna kill each other. All right. Lee, go next. What's your answer?
Well, I went up to the outdoor court just up the road from my place not too long ago because the hoops are back up.
Mm.
And I've been shooting on a small hoop with a small ball, mini ball now for over a year. So getting the big ball back in your hands and shooting it, like, it felt weird. I had to sort of adjust again.
Did you start at the free throw line? Get your radar right?
Of course.
Get your double
rimmers as well.
Yeah.
They're unforgiving. You got to swish them or else you're just clunking them all afternoon. So, but it definitely felt an adjustment was needed to have to shoot the sort of bigger, heavier ball again. But it was great. Took the boys up there. We took the scooters up there as well. took the soccer ball. We just ran around. We had the whole court to ourselves. It was awesome. So just great to be back, a little step closer to being able to play against just some other people on the court and having a game of basketball again.
Right. So you just shot around. You didn't get into a one-on-one or a little shooting contest with anybody.
No, there was no one else there. Okay. So the boys were trying to shoot their little mini ball onto the big hoop. Obviously, the 9-year-old did okay. The 4-year-old was way too far out of his range. But seeing the hoops back up again, because when they were down, I was like, man, this is hard, isn't it, to see when you've got a court there and you just can't go and shoot around even
right,
outdoors.
Right, right. Okay.
Good. We're back.
We're back, baby.
We're back.
Yeah. Tass, got an answer?
Well, sure. After we moved down here in 2013 down to Atlanta, I stopped playing softball. But a couple of years after that, we got back up north of the border, got to put on the cleats, got to put on the old glove, the old batting glove. Yeah, spit on the hands, put some sunflower seeds in the mouth, and then just sit there while everybody else goes to bat, and you just sit there, and you go play in the field. You don't get the ball.
Keeping score.
Softball, you know? It's much ado about nothing. You just you get ready for it, and nothing happens out there. No, it was great. I played softball, baseball basically every year of my life, so it was weird not playing for a while. And then I got some licks in with our friends down here, Dougie Miller, Jared Dent, but, man, I didn't put a dent in the ball that day. That was a bad day down here, so they didn't invite me back.
Oh,
so
no, now I got, really? That was yeah. What? Oh, wow.
I just randomly played at Piedmont right? Park, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a bad day.
But how are the seeds that day, Cassie? How are the seeds?
Oh, nice. Salty.
Salty.
That's a cool jacket, man. I'm going to give you that. It looks awesome. You just do you wear that around just normally or only in a diamond?
I'm not sure if it's
a nice
cool.
jacket.
It's
that's
a baseball.
Cool.
It's a classic baseball jacket.
Yeah.
It's a very classic puff, you know, big puffy on the outside and then the elastic band on the waist. I like it. Not going to lie. You feel a little bit douchey wearing it, no doubt. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not necessarily on a team. I mean, it is the old team jacket, though, so yeah. Yeah. Then people ask, hey, are you playing the Rounders? Nah, it's my old Canadian softball jacket from a long time ago, but yeah.
All right. I mean, my answer is something that I might be doing soon, and I haven't yet, and it is maybe going to a sporting event. Thinking of going to a baseball game maybe this weekend. And I haven't got a ticket yet, but still not like...
What's the Braves capacity at?
I think they're over 50%. They might even be
really?
More. That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah they weren't for a while. Be. I know. And, yeah. You know, you're feeling a little more confident, of course. Double-backed up. You still got to, I believe, wear a mask and that when you're not drinking or eating your poutine or your tall boys or stuff like that. But... Well, I'm thinking it over. Maybe if the weather's nice there on a Friday night, I'd love to go see the boys play a little baseball.
Looks like we got a series with the Phillies coming up this weekend. It's going to be major in the standings in the NL East at the end of the year.
I mean, I want to go see Kuna play, right, TK? I mean, he's killing it.
Might be the MVP. Might be the MVP, Skeets. We shall see.
There you go. So that'll happen soon enough.
They're going to 100% capacity, as are the United, pretty soon, this month.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought. I know.
Just drink through your mask. Just
drink through your mask.
Oh, wow.
You got to get your baseball game in, too, before July hits, man.
Exactly.
Because,
for sure.
We went to that game one time. It was just so stinking hot down there. I think Matt lasted barely an inning.
Oh, yeah, he can't sit in the sun like that. Nah. No way.
Oh, God, it gets hot.
Yeah, you're in the south for sure. Yeah, but you get a nice, beautiful, spring, early summer night game down at that arena or stadium. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Okay, so I'll keep you guys posted on whether I get there. What do we got? A few more, right? One more, maybe.
Last one. Hey, guys, I was having lunch outside the other day and I ordered some ceviche as I was enjoying this marvelous dish, which is probably my favorite food. Can't help but laugh while reading this. I remembered that Lee's wife, Roxana, is from Peru, the country that invented this great dish. I felt so grateful that Peru exists and provided humanity with this tasty recipe. My question is simple and not basketball related. What's a food or beverage you love so much? It made you grateful for the existence of the country it originated from. Love you guys. That's from Mohammed Hassan. Can't wait to see a photo of Lee eating ceviche. Here we go.
All right.
No, I don't have a photo of that, actually.
Hold on. It was also invented in Peru?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I didn't know that wrinkle. Yes. I know you had the greatest ceviche you've ever had in Peru. I didn't know it was created there, at least.
Yeah, I mean,
to...
I didn't even know it existed before I met Roxana. And then it's kind of, you know, because there's like corn and stuff in there, and you're like, and cilantro, and I'm like, oh, I don't know about this, but when it's done properly, it's incredible. See, to me, you know, when you first sort of start backpacking, a lot of people say, like, oh, you can live off, you know, £10 a day or $10 a day in this country. You only eat this and that. But eating is like one of the most amazing parts of the travel experience. Like, you want to eat the local food and try their drinks and all that stuff. So you never want to skimp on the food. You just, you know, when you're in a different country, it's like, just give me something that's local and it's great.
Okay. What would you skimp on then if you are traveling? Because you are the international
journalist. Well, I've stayed in hostels where you stay with like 12 other people. Okay. Completely. It's incredible what you actually do. You just leave. There's usually no... safes and things like that in the room. It's just basically you put your passport under your pillow or just in your bag, and you just hope that other people won't steal it.
I feel like that's changed maybe a little bit since you were traveling the globe.
I guess so. But I guess I remember in Scotland one time, and I was just like, you know, I'm like, God, you just all right, I'm out. You know, everyone sort of knows. Maybe it's that sort of mentality, like we're all in that same boat, but you're still trusting complete strangers you know, steal your stuff. But you know, the French, we know, are famous for the escargot, the snails.
As we know.
Yeah,
and the poutine.
But that sounds gross to eat snails. But I went to Lille one time, this place a couple of hours out of Paris, with a friend, and he was like, you've got to try the snails. And I'm just like, I don't know. Went to this restaurant that he knew, and these snails were amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
Let me guess, covered in butter.
Butter and garlic, yeah. But not that gross, like, you know, slippery. It's like octopus. If octopus is done properly, you know, it's not chewy and it's not tough. It's pretty succulent. And these snails were. And I remember just like, because you just gorge on them as well after a while when you're drinking. I must have had 30 snails that day. And it was just like, wow, I can't believe I was anti-snail and now I'm pro-snail. But I think outside of France, I don't think I would eat snails. I just don't think so. So, but yeah, it's funny. It's funny like that. I mean, like if someone says, hey, I'm coming, come over to my place, I'm cooking snails, I'd be like, I don't know. But,
I mean, they could make them exactly like you just had them.
I know. But it just, I mean, if they're experienced at making them, you know, maybe, but.
You want to see like a resume or something? What kitchens you've worked in?
Corn, disgusting. Meetings. Snails, okay.
Oh, once you get started with them though, I mean, it's like, okay, they are good. And yes, sure. You know, you see the shell and everything. So it's not like they're like hidden in a rice dish or a pasta dish or anything like that. It's like, I'm just eating snails, but. We'd had a few Cronenbergs as well that day, so you're a little more, you know.
They are good, though. You're not wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But most people would hear that and go, yeah, no thanks. I remember we had them in grade 8 in French class. I think we made them. Now, they probably weren't as good as your trip to France early, but I remember us doing that in class once with our French teacher. No, that's sort of strange. I'm sure that I can't even believe that was legal somehow. I don't know. Can you just straight up serve snails in a grade 8 French class? Guess so.
I dissected a worm in grade 9 probably. But
yeah, we did a frog.
No snails.
Sure. Yeah. TK, you got an answer?
I'm just still trying to get over Lee saying, I wouldn't eat snails outside of France. A claim on par with Matt Austin once telling me that he was one of the first people in North America to eat bruschetta. What? What? We were growing tomatoes out in our garden. At first he tells me I got garbage seeds. He's like, you're not getting good tomatoes here. There's no way. You got to get your tomatoes from Europe. Okay, fine. I don't have a packet of seeds from somewhere else. I got one packet, buddy. And then he starts telling me that he thinks he's one of the first people to ever eat bruschetta in North America. That's crazy stuff to me. I don't know.
I've heard him say this before, for sure. Yeah, I don't know if it's a bit with him. I can never tell. I actually don't think it is. I think he truly believes it. Yeah, that his family was one of the pioneers in bringing it here to North America.
No. JD was eating bruschetta at Eastside Mario's friggin' a long time ago.
Before Matt was born.
Wow. All right. JD, do you have an answer for this or Tass? Anybody else?
Yeah, I do have an answer. I'd like to thank Canada for poutine. Served hot, please.
Oh, boy. Whoa, what do we got
what
here?
What is this? What?
Somebody open. Oh, very good, though. Very good. Throw it.
Wow. Man, it's incredibly hot gravy.
What's better than this?
Woo! Thank you, Raptor. I needed that.
One more. I was quite hungry.
Holy moly.
And now we're home. It feels like we're
home. I can't talk.
You've been brown nosing a little bit.
Yeah. Wow. What were they chanting? We want fries?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I like that Lee didn't want to hold it. And the Raptor tried to give you the tray, didn't want
to
hold it.
Well, no, I think he was offering it to me just to take some more.
At one point it looks like he's going to hand it to you. Like, you think about it, and then you're like, no thanks.
Yeah.
No thanks. I eat a steak before this. Like 10 minutes before this. I'm good. Great find, JD. Great.
That was Lee. Lee sent it to me. Oh. Shout out to Lee.
Nicely done. That's
good stuff, Lee. I hope you can find the Johnny Flynn clip in its entirety.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to dig in for that
okay,
one.
Tass, any answer for this question here? Nah, final one?
No, I think I'm good.
End on poutine?
End on poutine, yep.
It's a tasty treat. Guys, great questions this week. Keep them coming. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com for our next Beach Deppin' podcast. You can tweet them in at nodunksinc. That's an INC there at the end. You can leave them in the YouTube comments. Like, comment, and subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Really, really appreciate it. Grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. And tomorrow, just a reminder, Tass, still with What You Need to Know, up early, early in the morning there, live on YouTube at around 7 a.m. Eastern, if you want to join him and JD there in the morning to let you know what happened tonight. And then 11 a.m. Eastern, we usually start at 10. We're going to be starting at 11 on Thursday. The Washington Post's Ben Golliver is going to join us for the entirety of the podcast. So we'll just talk hoops with him. And of course, we'll talk about his new book, Bubble Ball. Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. Lots of questions about this. It's fantastic. Highly recommend everybody go grab this, you know, from Amazon or your local bookstore or whatever. Bubble Ball by Ben Golliver. So, yeah, 11 a.m. start on Thursday. But I'm looking forward to that. So thanks again to everybody for joining us. Great questions. Keep them coming for the next one. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Can't wait to hear about Bubble Ball.
Bubble Ball. Bubble Ball.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, I was the first person to eat an olive in North America. My family didn't bring it over from Greece. I just went to the Olive Garden.
Embrace the day, people.